Hello and welcome once again to Crazy Comics and Stories. It's me, your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. And at the other end of the series of tubes and wires that we call the internets is Joe, Crazy Writer. How you doing today, Joe?
I'm alone.
Oh.
So alone!
Where's everybody at?
Well, you know, now that Holly's, 18 and has her own car, she's never home, and Chris decided to go up to a cabin for a few days, so I've been left all alone in my house, except me and my bun, who's currently hiding under the bed.
So does that mean that you don't have to wear pants?
You are correct, sir.
That's what I thought.
It also means my wife hid the pressure cooker, because the last time she left her with me, well, let's just say NASA called politely and asked never for me to shoot things in orbit again. Darn.
See, I have a pressure cooker, but it's an Instant Pot, which is this handy-dandy appliance that is a crock pot and a pressure cooker and all these other things. And when I bought it because, hey, you know, I can set this and come home and, oh, look, there's soup. Oh, look, there's this. But I did not realize there was a cult around these things to where I joined a Facebook group, and I had to put the group on mute because it had more activity than all of the comic book groups I have combined. But I use it once in a while. I prefer my old-fashioned crock pot.
It's a crock!
Because I, as a vegetarian, I eat a lot of beans. And I don't want to be buying canned beans for, you know, like five times the cost of the dry beans.
Or has beans.
Wait a minute. We don't have any has beans on this show anymore.
Ever wanted beans?
But
human beans.
There we go, human beans. But it's like, okay, now I could buy 10 cans of black beans.
And that's not even going to Costco.
Well, that is at Costco. 10 cans of black beans are like, I don't know, $7-$8. Or I buy 2 pounds of the dried black beans for $1.10.
You realize Costco's getting rid of their Polish hot dog.
Yes.
Very sad.
But as long as they have the cheese pizza and the soda and the berry sundae, I'm good.
Well, they're keeping the all-beef one you can get for, like, what, chips and a hot dog for $1.50 or something?
Yeah, but I don't eat the hot dogs.
You wouldn't believe, you just throw it out. You eat the bun. But you wouldn't believe the amount of people when we were on the road and we were camped out across from a Costco. By God, everybody hit that place.
Oh, yeah.
Cheap.
Oh, yeah. The Costco's where I buy, if I have to buy a lot of veggies, I go to Costco. Now, here's something that I bet you don't know, Joe. What is the store brand at Costco?
I don't know. I haven't been in Costco in years.
It is called Kirkland.
Kirkland.
Now, if you go to the Aldi, they have Kirkland items as well in smaller packages. Even though Costco...
We all know it. You want your package large.
Well, not if you're living on your own.
Giant size, you might say.
I don't need 20 pounds of tortilla chips.
I think you do.
I wouldn't be able to eat 20 pounds of tortilla chips in a year, and I even not use relevant. Tortilla chips in my chili.
Speaking of chili, and this is a segue to somewhere else, I tried a new fashionable food item. Now, I know we haven't done that segment for ages on our show.
Yeah, we did it about a month ago.
Yeah, ages. But I went out and I tried me one of them new fresh beef quarter pounders from... McDonald's.
Oh, really? Was it worth the trouble of going to a McDonald's?
Well, fortunately, Chris did it. So that was back when, you know, my hip was so bad I couldn't walk. So she went out to get. I get them and I scrape the onions off them because they have like onions that are about like the size of birch bark trees.
Yes.
But they don't put like what I would hope to be on it, like ketchup, well, mustard, lettuce, tomato. I did get cheese. But really, I think Culver's does it better. You know, because, I mean, you could tell there's a different taste. But, you know, it's not enough to make me come back again and again. You know, maybe if they dress it up a little bit more, you know, what's that? I'm trying to think what they call it. Deluxe it, you know, slap on that tomato, lettuce, pickle thing. So the fries were good. That's one thing McDonald's does very well, our French fries.
You know, next week we'll have a special guest. No, not next week. 2 weeks from now we'll have a special guest. So maybe in 2 weeks we'll go over the state fair foods.
Maybe.
But this week we have actually something very serious to talk about.
Yeah.
One of the founding fathers of Marvel in the Silver Age has passed away. Steve Ditko passed away. He was 90 years old, still working on a comic book. And that leaves very few people left. Kirby's gone. Don Heck. Flo Steinberg. Artie Simak. George Russo's, who did a lot of coloring. Chris Rule, who did some inking. From the really early days of Marvel, we still have Stan Lee. We have Larry Lieber. And I think, someone may correct me, but I think that's about it from the first, I would say the first 5-6 years of Marvel who are still left with us.
Yep, I think you're right on that.
And somebody was asking me about Kirby and why was Kirby important. But first, Joe, what was the first Steve Ditko story you ever read?
I would say it would have to be that Dynamite magazine number 4. If you recall, what they did in there is they would take a superhero and they would basically run 2 pages out of their origin story, and then they have a sheet in back that would explain everything, you know, like question and answer thing. And that was the first exposure I had to Spider-Man, because obviously Ditko had done the origin story straight out of the comic. I think it was him getting bitten by the spider, and then he wandered out in the street and jumped up, got to the top of the building and crushed it and realized he had extra powers. And just those 2 pages was really the first exposure I had to Kirby.
Ditko.
I'm sorry, Ditko. Well, actually, Kirby and Ditko, because where I really got exposed to them was when I bought those aforementioned pocketbooks. In the case of Ditko, they did 3 volumes that had early Spider-Man in it, and then they did a Doctor Strange volume, as well as, again, Fantastic Four with Kirby. But those were probably the first exposure I had to them in terms of, you know, well, at least early memory, before I got to the point where, you know, you pick up a comic and it's like, oh, look, this is Kirby. You know, you recognize the art style. Because even then, like I mentioned before, you know, what Kirby was doing the late 70s versus what he did in the Fantastic Four, I was looking at like, whoa, did his style change? I don't recall in the 70s, again, I started about 78, if Ditko was doing anything regularly. I know he popped up. Was it Marvel Premier we were talking about? He did like Dragon King and Captain Everything.
Captain Universe.
Universe, thank you. Captain Everything is Jim Valentino's.
Let's see. Another regular series that he was doing in the 70s was he filled in on Micronauts, but he did Machine Man after Kirby left.
Yeah, and I do recall reading that, because one of the big hot books was Alpha Flight. And they actually referred to a couple of the members of Alpha Flight went after Machine Man. So if you were reading Alpha Flight, you went out to pick up that Machine Man. And for a while, it actually was worth a little bit in the back issue market.
But, there was also an issue of Machine Man that was worth a little more in the back issue market because of Jack-O-Lantern.
Mm-hmm.
First appearance of Jack-O-Lantern, which was one of Kirby's coolest villain designs, in my opinion. And probably his best villain design during his second run at Marvel.
Yeah, because I remember, like you said, the Micronauts, and then, of course, he filled in to finish out ROM, which was a little jarring from the previous art, but I was kind of like, oh, it's cool that he's, by that time I was like, it's cool he's back doing stuff, you know? And of course, the naive, non-involved Cray was like, why doesn't he go back and do Spider-Man or Doctor Strange? Especially Doctor Strange. I mean, his backgrounds for Doctor Strange were so fantastic. And there was a feeling in his early runs that Doctor Strange was really alone. You don't kind of get that anymore in the Marvel comics. Especially, you know, like Spider-Man. Yeah, he was just swinging through New York, stopping burglars, you know, doing whatever. And, you know, even when Doctor Strange, he was being hunted down by the wraiths that later we found were, how do you say it? Dormammu. And you just got the feeling that he was alone. You know, he was master of the mystic arts. He was just on his own. Nowadays, it's like, oh, well, here, let me call Squirrel Girl. She'll help me out. Or might as well go to the top if you're going to go anywhere. It was just a great feeling of those stories.
My first exposure to Steve Ditko was in Origins of Marvel Comics. And I got that in 75 because I'd become such a huge Marvel fan. And in it, it would have an origin story and then a more recent story. So you got the origin story of the Fantastic Four, the origin story of the Hulk, the origin story of Spider-Man, the origin story of Thor, and then Doctor Strange. So there was Spider-Man's origin and Doctor Strange's first story and his origin. And the thing about the Doctor Strange one was that the first story was just kind of, oh, okay. Then the origin was really spooky and weird and cool. And, you know, all of the stories in there, you know, as a kid, I was like, oh, wow. But the one that really knocked my socks off, and still to this day, I think it's the best origin story ever in any comic, was Spider-Man. And it was the art was different, and it was odd, and the people looked weird, and the poses were strange and kind of spidery and creepy. And now I know that the reason it looked like that was because Ditko treated it like it was one of the horror slash mystery comics.
We did a 9-panel grid too, so there was a lot of story in those early ones.
But he had that twist ending that he would do. And it's one of the reasons Stan would always give Ditko the more philosophical twist ending stuff, and he'd give Kirby the, you know, the big monster stuff, and he'd give Don Heck the more I don't want to call it pedestrian, but more, you know, subtle drama type stuff during that time period. Steve Ditko was born son of first generation Slovak descent. He and his family was from the Ukraine, which is where the name Ditko comes from. And his father was a master carpenter at a steel mill who absolutely adored Prince Valiant, to the point where his wife would cut out the Prince Valiant strip every week, and they kept it in a book. And Steve Ditko just kept reading it and reading it and reading it, and that's where his love of comics came from. And he joined the military in 1945, did some military service in post-war Germany, and he drew comics for the Army newspaper. He didn't have any education beyond high school when he went into the military. And then when he got out, he learned that his idol, Batman artist Jerry Robinson, was teaching at the School for Visual Arts. At the time, it was called the Cartoonist and Illustrator School, but it's now the School of Visual Arts in New York. So he moved to New York and enrolled in the art school under the GI Bill and studied with Jerry Robinson, who was, you know, basically he was the visual guy for Batman. Bill Finger was the story guy, and Bob Kane was the guy who would take it into the office and claim all the work, claim all the credit. And Ditko actually met Stan Lee while he was at that school, because Robinson would have editors and other creators come in, and Ditko met Stan Lee, And Stan Lee liked his work and said, well, you know, when you're done and your stuff gets a little better, go ahead and drop by. I'll have work for you. So when he actually got out of school, he started working for some of the smaller end publishers. And Joe, there was one time we were down at Steve Brown, Man of Renown's shop, which is Cedar Cliff Collectibles, and I bought a slipcase set that had every issue of the 1950s comic from Carlton, The Thing. And that has some of Ditko's earliest work. And he got work with Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, beginning as an inker, doing backgrounds. He also worked with Mort Meskin, who was a comic artist in the 50s, and his known associate work was aiding Meskin on Jack Kirby's pencil work on Captain 3D, and work for Crestwood Publications, the Prize Comics. But it was during this time that he also worked with Mort Meskin on adult comics, the kind men like.
Oh, yes.
And he did a lot of fetish work.
Yeah, with Eric Stanton,
yes.
one of my guys I like.
Who, I have not seen any of that work. I know it was collected a while ago.
I've actually, for a while there, I was collecting Stanton's stuff. And, you know, it's weird because you're going through it and you recognize his style. And then you could see when Ditko was helping, only because I was familiar with his art.
And Ditko had a really unique style.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things, I love the artists talking about how much they love his work. They talked about the composition of his panels. But everybody, and I didn't notice it till I started reading Fred Hembeck, because Hembeck was obsessed with it, the way Steve Ditko draws hands. And if you look at Spider-Man and you look at Doctor Strange, they had weird hand gestures. That all came from Ditko. Ditko liked the strange hand gestures to the point where there was an issue of Spider-Man where it was in a museum and Ditko was putting hands and feet in paintings. Just here's a painting of a foot or a statue of a foot and a painting of a hand. And one of the people in the gallery went, wow, those hands are great. But through the 50s, he worked in a number of different companies, and he got in the door at probably the company that, other than Marvel, he's best known for working with, and that's Carlton. Joe, tell the people about Carlton Comics.
I don't know much about him.
Carlton kind Comics.
Secondary market, jumped on whatever they could.
Probably owned by the mob.
Yeah.
They printed because they wanted to keep the printing presses running all night. Basically, they printed low-end magazines and puzzle magazines. And back in the 50s and 60s, if you wanted your low-end word search or crossword puzzle magazines, Carlton was the one who was doing those. And they had their own distribution channel. And their comics were printed on the same press, which was a terrible, terrible press. To the point where I think in the 70s, one of the artists I talked to at a convention who worked at Carlton in the 70s said, yeah, they would print the magazines and they'd print the comics and then they'd print cereal boxes. All on the same printing press.
Yeah, sounds about right.
But he worked at Carlton. And one of the things about Carlton that he always went back to, that he always enjoyed, as long as he didn't violate the comic code, they left him alone. They would say, we need a horror comic, we need this, we need that. He would usually have a scripter who would send him stuff, and he would just draw it the way he wanted, and they would leave him alone. Well, over at Marvel, he got a lot of the twist ending stories, a lot of the stories where there was more of a moral to it. There was more, there weren't monsters, it was more a moral quandary or something like that. And Stan loved his stuff. Stan absolutely loved his stuff. And he talked often about how he took the comic Amazing Adventures, which they tried a bunch of things with. At first it was a monster book. Then they tried their first superhero. Joe, who was the Marvel first superhero?
Submariner.
No, Marvel.
Oh, Marvel. I have no idea.
Dr. Droom, who became Dr. Druid.
Droom.
And that didn't work. So they basically turned it into Amazing Adult Fantasy. Not that kind of adult.
No.
And it was basically Stan and Steve Ditko doing Twilight Zone type stories. And that's where Spider-Man came from, because it was kind of in that style of the twist ending story. Now, did you pick up the Amazing Fantasy Omnibus, Joe?
No, I have it in essential format.
The Amazing Fantasy?
No, just the last one for Spider-Man.
Oh.
But no, I didn't pick up the Omnibus.
If you ever see that for a decent price and you want to see what Ditko's pre-Spider-Man stuff was like, go ahead and pick that up, because there are like 6 or 7 issues of just pure Ditko Stan Lee stuff that's so entertaining and so good, even though it's, 50-some years old. Other than Ditko's art looking very 50-ish, it doesn't feel dated at all. The stories are kind of set in their own little fantasy world. But before he started the Marvel Revolution, he actually did some hero stuff over at Carlton, including Captain Atom, which he created over at Carlton in 1960. So, Captain Atom, before the Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four and all that. But then he, over at Marvel, after Spider-Man hit, Stan gave him Spider-Man, and then he created Doctor Strange. And Ditko also helped out on other books. He did some early stuff in Thor. He's the one who changed Iron Man from a big, gray, hulking robot-looking thing to the sleek red and gold armor. So while Don Heck and Jack Kirby created Iron Man, the Iron Man look that we still know today was created by Ditko. And I was talking with someone earlier over the weekend about what Ditko brought to Marvel. And I said that Kirby brought characters, and this was after kind of the opening, because the opening of the Fantastic Four and Thor and things like that were very much Stan Lee based. And you can read that. Those early Fantastic Fours read a lot like superhero versions of Stan's teenage drama books. The Submariner loves Sue, and Sue can't choose between him and Reed, and Johnny's all angry about being ignored, and the thing's a monster. But once Kirby took over, the characters became much larger than life, almost mythic. On Thor, the characters were very mythic. When Don Heck was doing a book, it was more down-to-earth drama. You read his Iron Man stuff, and there's superhero fights, but it's very much, Iron Man is a conflicted playboy who's in love with Pepper Potts, but Happy is in love with Pepper as well, and boy, Stan loved him, his romantic triangles, didn't he? But Ditko's stuff was just odd. The characters, like you talked about, felt like they were outsiders. Peter Parker as a superhero was weird and kind of an outsider, and the Fantastic Four didn't want him, and the Avengers didn't want him, and the newspapers hated him, and Peter Parker was, the weird kid that nobody wanted to talk to, and Doctor Strange was, there alone. Ditko did the story of the outsiders, and if you look at his characters, even the beautiful women in his books had a level of meanness to them. the Gwen Stacy in those early Spider-Mans, she's a nasty, nasty bitch.
Yeah. Yeah, there was definitely something changed there from her when she first appeared. But and of course, the big one was always that Ditko never let us see Mary Jane.
Right.
And that was actually funny because a lot of people were using the reveal of Face It Tiger, you hit the jackpot as one of Ditko's work. Kind of like, that wasn't him. That was somebody else.
That was Johnny Romita. And when Johnny Romita took over Spider-Man, he said he was so intimidated by how good Ditko was that he drew like Ditko for at least the first year or so, so that people wouldn't think the book had changed. But after Ditko left, the book really did change. Peter became handsome. Gwen softened. The women became pretty. The harder edge of the characters really dulled down. J. Jonas Jameson wasn't as frightening anymore. He was more goofy. He was more kind of a comic foil for Spider-Man than a real threat. Aunt May still looked like she was 155. But in those early stories, we've talked about them a lot. Joe, what was your favorite of the... What was your favorite parts of Doctor Strange and Spider-Man when Ditko was doing them?
I think just the large quest they had, because he was fighting against... I can't think of the... What was his name?
Baron Mordo.
Mordo. I was going to say Mordu, but that's, I think, Legion of Superheroes. But he was fighting against him. It was obvious that Mordo had somebody backing him. And so Doctor Strange had to go through these big quests. He had to go find Eternity. He had to do all these different things. And then he finally found Dormammu. And that was just, I mean, crazy stuff. I mean, especially when he's running around the world trying to do his quests while these invisible wraiths are seeking him. And it just comes off as so alone. You know, he can't even contact the Ancient One for help because he's obviously being held. And it was just a fantastic run. I mean, when things were... And he finally meets Eternity, and Eternity doesn't really give him anything. He says, you have what you need to defeat him, and poof, he's gone. Just amazing things. And Clea was just hot. I mean, he drew her so... They were like, who's this Strange? It was to the point even when that run ended and what? Oh, hang on a second. I gotta go find my Atomic Avenue. I'm just wondering what the last issue.
146.
Was that, and was that? Was Ditko on it the whole time?
Yes. Ditko made every issue up to 140. Strange Tales 146. He finished up the quest story. And left the book. And left Marvel.
Yeah. And then when Doctor Strange appeared again, it was such a... Again, this is almost... I talked about how in ROM, when Steve showed up, it was so jarring. Well, in this case, it was almost the opposite. I was so enthralled with what Kirby was doing. The next guy who came on, and I don't even know, it was a Marvel premiere or Doctor Strange's title.
No, Strange Tales continued up till 168. But, man, the quality just dropped off a cliff after Ditko left.
The story sucked. The art was different. I mean, and, yeah, it was almost jarring in the opposite, you know.
And one of Ditko's contributions to Marvel that I don't think gets nearly enough attention. Joe, you picked up those pocketbooks, right?
Oh, yeah.
Did you pick up the one for the Hulk?
I did.
You had a couple, I think the first few issues were Jack Kirby, and the last two issues were Steve Ditko. And Ditko's stuff was so different in that the Hulk really seemed like a monster. He was drawn more like the Frankenstein monster. There was very little heroic about him, and everything about him was changing. And, when Hulk came back in his own series, Ditko was the one drawing him.
You know, we tend to think of Hulk as a Jack Kirby, and then, you know, John Severin and Marie Severin and Herb Trimpe. But Ditko had a lot to do with those early issues and really shaped, again, the outsider, hunted and hated by the world. And I've talked relentlessly about those 37 issues or 38 issues? 38 issues by Ditko of Amazing Spider-Man. There is a timelessness to them that I don't think many other books have. When the Essentials started coming out, I would pick those up. And my son, who would get grounded from TV and computer, because he would not turn in his homework, would grab those and read them. And yeah, the Fantastic Four he liked, and this one he liked, and the X-Men he kind of liked. But the Spider-Man one he liked so much he wanted them for himself. And he reread them and reread them and reread them. I think I had to buy three of the first Spider-Man Essential from you because he literally read one of them until it fell apart. And to this day, he says, you know, it's not going to be a good Spider-Man movie until they do Mysterio, because he loved the Mysterio story by Ditko so much.
Yeah, even my girls liked that early stuff. They had my Essentials each for a extended amount of time as they read through them. And, you know, if I got to admit, I do like going through the early Spideys.
And he really captured that feeling of being a teenager when, you know, everything's strange and you don't fit in and you don't know what's happening. And Spider-Man was a very different book from what it became, but also from anything else on the stands. You know, I can't even think of any other book where, other than the Submariner of the late 30s, early 40s, where the hero was hated by the world at large. You know, even the Fantastic Four, there were a few times when people were scared of them and everything. But, oh, it's a manipulation by the Skrulls. We love the Fantastic Four. They're heroes. But Spider-Man, nope, never really was accepted during the Ditko run. There are all sorts of stories as to why Steve Ditko left Marvel. But the main one that I want to focus on is that the last few years, Steve Ditko and Stan Lee didn't even talk to each other. Ditko would bring in the finished pages with notes on the sides, letting Stan know what the story was so that Stan could script it. And most of the time, Ditko would come in when he knew Stan would not be in the office. Which leads to one of my favorite stories about Ditko. He would come in, and if you worked at Marvel, you would get all the books that had been published so you could keep up on what was going on, because, you know, Stan wanted everything to be interconnected. And Ditko hated Vince Coletta, hated his inking, and hated him on a personal level. So when he would pick up his books, he would look through, and anything inked by Vince Coletta, he would go into Stan's office and put them in Stan's garbage can. Right up on top, flat down, so Stan could see. Stan, you know, notorious bad memory and really doesn't like to tell a lot of stories about it where he screws up. To this day, says he does not know why Steve Ditko left. Ditko has done a lot of essays around the issue. This is my personal belief, based on what was going on, what other artists have said, and the essays that Ditko wrote. Around 1965-66, Spider-Man sales were really high, and they started to be merchandising. There were Spider-Man inflatable pillows. There were Spider-Man shirts. There were all sorts of these Spider-Man things floating out there. And Ditko, who really was not friendly with Stan, went to Martin Goodman and said, "When do I get my cut?" And Martin Goodman said, "Well, you know, you're going to get your cut. You'll get a portion of it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera." And, you know, I've told many stories about how Mark Goodman would promise people stuff and then never deliver when it came to money. And over the years, well, they sold the Spider-Man rights to be a cartoon. And the other Marvel stuff was going to be a cartoon, and they were actually cutting up comics for the animation for the cartoons, and none of the artists got anything for that. And I think Ditko finally got to the point where he just had enough, and he quit. And recently, it's one of the artists who knew Ditko, and Ditko would actually answer his questions, asked him within the last few years, well, how are things between you and Stan? And Ditko said, it's settled. He didn't say they were good. He didn't say it was, he said it was settled. Everything between them was settled. But Ditko left. He went to Warren, where he did some stuff. And where else did he go, Joe?
He went to DC, like everybody else was want to do.
Nah, he had a stop before then.
Oh.
He went to Carlton.
Oh, was Carlton still publishing?
Oh, Carlton was publishing until like 84, 85.
Very tenacious.
And he worked on the Blue Beetle, which was a character that had been around for years and years and years and years. He was involved in the revamp of the Blue Beetle, created the Question, and worked under editor Dick Giordano. And when Dick Giordano was hired by DC, Giordano brought all of his creators over because the people at DC said, we don't want you. We want all of these people you're working with. Steve Skeen, Jim Aparo, Steve Ditko, et cetera, et cetera. And two of the books he did at DC during the late 60s were Hawk and Dove and The Creeper. Hawk and Dove were two brothers. One was a liberal, one was a conservative, and they were given powers by the Lords of Order and Chaos to basically be superheroes. And it didn't last very long, but it was loved at DC, so the characters kept coming back and coming back and coming back. And the Hawk and Dove miniseries was actually Rob Liefeld's first major work. So, Joe, without Steve Ditko, we wouldn't have got Rob Liefeld.
Hot snot.
And then there was the Creeper, which is one of the strangest goddamn comic characters in the world.
Yeah.
I just look at the Creeper's costume and go, that's really cool, but there's absolutely no way on this planet it makes any sense at all. He's got like a shag rug around his neck, weird hair, green hair, yellow skin. He has a laugh that drives people crazy. And it was just an odd, odd book. Just an odd, odd book. And again, that's a character that people like, but it never caught on. And since his stuff didn't really catch on, where did he go? Back to Carlton.
Yep.
And at Carlton, he really worked on a lot of their mystery/horror books. Tons of that stuff. All of it is public domain now, by the way. So there are two or three people who are, you know, putting out publications of it. One of them is Craig Yeo.
Yeo.
Who puts out books collecting the Carlton stuff. I actually came home and my Gorgo book, which was kind of a Godzilla knockoff from England. Carlton got the rights to do Gorgo and Ditko did all those stories, so I got that one, and then Konga, which was kind of their knockoff of King Kong.
Gorgo, Konga.
Yeah, you couldn't do the big monsters over at Marvel, but bring him to Carlton, you could do them. And then when Jim Shooter became publisher at Marvel, one of the things that Shooter says he wanted to do is he wanted to bring all the old Marvel creators back in the fold. So he reached out to Ditko and gave Ditko work. And Ditko said, you know, I will work at Marvel long as you don't ask me to do Spider-Man or Doctor Strange. So that's why he did all the books he did. He even did a Hulk story, did an Iron Man story, did a few Iron Man stories, except there was one Iron Man story he refused to do.
Really?
Yes. It was, if you go back through your, that long run by Denny O'Neill where Iron Man fell off the wagon.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is drawn by Maurice Severn. And it's because Ditko refused to draw it. He told the editor at Marvel, I won't draw a story where a superhero is a drunk. And I guess he and Bob Layton were friends, and they got into a friendly discussion about it, where Bob Layton talked about how alcoholism was a disease, and Ditko was, no, it's a moral failure. And Layton said he and Ditko discussed it very respectfully for a long time. Didn't change either one's mind, but it was fascinating how Ditko had that belief system. And it's one of the things I have not talked about yet, and that is Ditko was an objectivist.
Oh, I thought you were going to mention that he created Squirrel Girl as well as did the first run of Speedball.
He co-created Squirrel Girl.
Oh, debuted. But which issue?
It was in Marvel Superheroes, what, number 5 or 6, something like that.
Volume 2, number 8.
Yep. The character was created by Will Murray, not knowing Ditko was going to draw it.
Wait, did you say Bill Murray from Saturday Night Live?
No, Will Murray, the current writer of The Shadow and Dark Shadows, and Doc Savage, and wrote a whole bunch of Destroyer novels. But when Ditko came back, it was kind of a big deal. And, you know, Jim Shooter said, I was doing everything I could to bring back all of the people who worked at Marvel. Well, he didn't bring back Don Heck. And
well, why the heck not?
And he kind of shoved Gene Colan out the door. And was a complete asshole to Jack Kirby. But yeah, Jim Shooter says he wanted all of the people who were at the original Marvel to come back. Yeah, yeah. Ditko also became very enamored of the philosophy of Ayn Rand. He became an objectivist to the point where he created a character for in the 60s for Wally Wood's underground comic called Wit's End called Mr. A. Joe, have you ever read a Mr. A story?
I tried.
Mr. A is supposedly a superhero, but he doesn't have any powers or anything. He's just kind of a vigilante. But it's very much based on the Ayn Rand philosophy. A is A, which is a thing cannot be anything it's not. There is good and there is evil and there is no gray between the two. There are no shades of gray. And Ditko very much stuck with that philosophy. And if you look back at his later Spider-Man stories, you could see that philosophy was starting to creep in. Now, a lot of people say that the Ayn Randian stuff is very right-wing, and the right-wing has embraced that. But Ditko was kind of not right-wing or left-wing. He more really believed in this philosophy. And there were certain stories he wouldn't draw. He wouldn't draw stories where the hero was acting unheroic. And that's why when he was at Marvel, there were certain books he did and certain books he didn't do. He didn't mind if a character had a flaw, but if it was a moral failing, he would not draw the character. And he wouldn't draw characters where heroes would do non-heroic things.
So the Punisher by Steve Ditko was definitely out.
Right. Although, it's why he did the Chuck Norris's Karate Commandos. Because they gave him the script, and he was like, oh, yeah, this is the kind of stuff I like to do. And say what you want. The fact that he stuck so strongly to his philosophy and never sold it out. There are a lot of people who don't like that about him. I think it's something to kind of be admired. I don't agree with his philosophy, but I've read a lot of the self-published stuff he did through the 80s, 90s, 2000s, up to kind of recently. And more they become illustrated essays about how he believes that, you know, the problem with society is the fact that we focus in on shades of gray rather than understanding that there is something that is right and there is something that is wrong and there's nothing in between. To the point where Craig Yeo talked about how he was printing all this Ditko stuff that was public domain. And every time he would contact Steve Ditko and say, hey, I'm printing this. I'd like to give you, you know, a piece of the action. And Ditko would say, nope, I was paid for that art. I agreed to do it based on a certain page agreement. I met my agreement. They met theirs. Now, there are two stories floating out there about the Spider-Man movie. One story is that Marvel offered him a very big check and he did not take it. Another is that Marvel offered him a very big check and he took it.
And the other one is that apparently a neighbor got a piece of Steve Ditko's mail by mistake, because when they opened up, there was a check with a lot of zeros on it.
Yes.
So they were coming to a conclusion, well, Steve was doing okay.
Yes. Well, and the other thing is, he was in the same apartment for since at least the 70s and maybe even the 60s. Joe, what's the one rule that New York has about apartments that no other city has?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm reading something else. What was that?
What's the rule that New York City has about apartment costs that no other city has?
Are they subsidized or?
Rent control.
Ah.
When you rent an apartment, as long as you stay in that apartment, or a member of your family who has lived there, you know, if you pass away and the kids have been living in the apartment, that apartment's rent stays the same. So Steve Ditko, who lived in an apartment above a gourmet hamburger stand, was still paying the same rent that he probably paid in the 70s and maybe even into the 60s. So he wouldn't need a whole lot of money to maintain that apartment. But Steve was very adamant about what he believed, to the point where I've been reading all sorts of stories about Ditko over the weekend.
Yeah, they're coming out.
And JMD Matias, who wrote all kinds of stuff, wrote a few stories on the Legion of Superheroes with Ditko. And he said that after they got done at the DC offices, they were walking through New York and just chatting. And DeMatteis was really young, and it was, you know, one of his first jobs. So he was talking about Ditko, about their next story coming up and all this. And he hadn't been in comics long, so he didn't know. So he asked Steve Ditko in the late 70s, so you ever thinking of going back and working on Spider-Man? And Ditko said no and excused himself and walked across the street and never talked to DeMatteis again.
It's sad, but I know people have done that in other aspects of their life. They just decide, you know what? I'm just going to be. I guess I never understood it, but as long as he was happy with it.
Yep, he did.
I was always curious as to why he never wanted to you would say cash in on his fame, but good Lord, he's been treated like royalty if he went to a con or, you know, gave an interview or even, how do you say it? Give him the accolades he deserves.
You know why he didn't go to conventions?
I could give you about a dozen reasons why. You got one of them. Maybe he was anxious.
No.
An introvert.
No, he went to one of the earliest conventions and hated it. Just hated it. He thought that he would be able to sit down and talk about art and other things, and he didn't like it. He didn't enjoy the conversations, and he felt that fans were ripping him off because people would ask him for a sketch, and they would then print it as the cover of their fanzine. So basically, Ditko would write them and go, look, I gave you a sketch, and you have used it as a cover. If I knew you were going to use it as a cover, I would have charged you for it. You basically took advantage of me. Even in conversation, he would talk about art, and he would talk about, you know, how to draw, but he didn't want to talk about, you know, himself. And he always said that the art speaks for itself. He had no problem talking to people about his philosophy, about how he drew things. his thoughts on page layout, his thoughts on inking, his thoughts on how much detail needs to be in your pages. But if they would ask about him, you know, what's your favorite story? What are the things you like to draw? He didn't want to talk about it. He felt the art told the story. He didn't give interviews to the point where Brian Michael Bendis, in his early days at Marvel, had a column at Wizard. And what it was, he would interview the creators of things for, you know, a one or two page thing. And he contacted Steve Ditko and said, yo, hey, first off, I want to thank you because I'm doing a new Spider-Man book and I wouldn't have a job if it weren't for you. And Ditko was very polite and said, you're welcome. And he said, well, one of the things that I'd like to do is talk to you about, you know, all of this stuff because I have this column I do in Wizard, and Ditko said I don't do interviews. Well, how about we talk about why you don't do interviews? And Ditko said, that's very clever, but that still would be an interview. there is a Facebook group that just started, Letters from Steve Ditko.
Yes, I saw it.
And Ditko was... he would write people as long as it wasn't, you know, asking for stuff. Or, you know, one of the letters they printed is, you know, Steve Ditko just wrote, I don't talk about upcoming projects. That was the whole letter. But he had no problem talking about art, talking about his philosophy, talking about what he believed. There are a lot of comic creators who talk about when they would get to chat with him and they would talk about politics or things like that. He would very, very well spoken, very animated, very respectful. He knew people didn't believe what he believed, and he was respectful to their beliefs, but he also was so secure in his, he knew that he wasn't going to change his mind. And I think one of the things about Ditko that people don't quite grasp is that for him, his philosophy was like how really religious people are. Where, you know, if you're an Orthodox Jew, you won't say, you won't even type God. There are a few people on Facebook, some of the older Jewish people, who will type G, space, you know, and then a line, you know, the underscore G. Why? Because it's disrespectful. You know, one of the, taking the Lord's name in vain, even typing it out. And he was like that with his philosophy, where, you know, this is what I believe, and this is how I base my life. And I think that, you know, you don't have to agree with it, you don't have to understand it, but I do think it's something to be admired. Now, Joe, one of the things I said is, let's talk about our favorite Ditko stories. And I didn't make up a list. I just have a few stories that are my favorites. Do you have any that you count as your favorites?
Well, the Doctor Strange run, definitely. You know, in the beginning where he's trying to figure out who Dormammu is. You know, and a lot of that's kind of spoiled nowadays because we know who he is. They've fought dozens of times, you know. They're going to fight again. But the discovery of you must seek eternity. I mean, so that I think would be probably my very favorite of all. The early Spider-Man, again, just because of the way I got exposed to him. You know, I started with 178, and you felt kind of a, I don't know, maybe it was, I really enjoyed the share universe thing. I mean, it's because, like, when Rom fought that house with the floating candle, I don't know if they ever named it or whatever, but the first time we had seen him was all the way back in Doctor Strange during the Ditko run. And I had read that, so I already knew who that was. Ironic that Ditko would finish off Rom for Marvel, but there you go. Those would have to be my big two. What are some of yours?
Well, I think Ditko's best story was the Master Planner trilogy in Spider-Man, which was, I think, Spider-Man 31 through 33.
Oh, yeah.
Where Spider-Man was tracking down the people who worked for the Master Planner. We had no idea who the Master Planner was. And when it turned out that it was Dr. Octopus pulled down a building on Spider-Man and buried him under the rubble at the end of the issue. Which leads to the best sequence in any Spider-Man story ever. Spider-Man is trapped under the rubble. Water is coming in, filling the room. And all of the rubble and equipment and everything on him is too much for him to lift. And he tries and can't do it. And he tries and he can't do it. And he realizes that without him, Aunt May won't survive. And all of these people are counting on him. And Dr. Octopus will, you know, be able to put his plan in place. And he struggles up. And over that 3-page sequence, he struggles up and finally throws the equipment off and frees himself. And when you go back and read that story, Spider-Man, before that, still kind of drawn as kind of a scrawny teenager. When he throws the equipment off, he's drawn like a muscle man. He's drawn almost like a Kirby figure. Brute force and muscle and just... It's an amazing, amazing 3-page sequence. And I can't tell you how many artists on Facebook posted that sequence to show why they loved him. But it showed that Ditko could tell a story and he understood. You know, when Spider-Man was buried under the rubble, he was a kid. When he broke out, he was a man. That was his coming of age. You talked about the Doctor Strange, the Dormammu quest, which I remember reading it in the Doctor Strange paperbacks. And I was like, oh man, this story goes on forever. I can't even imagine what it was like reading it month to month. But I think Ditko's second greatest story is the origin of Spider-Man. 100 years from now, that story will still hold up. It is the best origin story of any character ever. And Ditko knew exactly how to pace it, exactly how to stage it, when to pull in, when to push back, when to show emotion, when to make Spider-Man seem unworldly and eerie and almost like a monster. It was so, so incredibly good. I liked Ditko's Marvel stuff in the 70s. I sought it out at the time because I was just fascinated by how he drew. But much like how you talked about how, in your mind, Kirby stuff in the 70s was different and you didn't like it as much, I think Ditko really hit his peak in the early 60s. And after that, he was trying to recapture that glory, trying to recapture that magic. And he really couldn't without Stan Lee putting the words on the page and kind of polishing Ditko's stuff, polishing it up so that it was more mainstream friendly. Because his other stuff is just as good, it's just more and more weird. To the point where if you read the stuff that he wrote himself, the names people had, those aren't real names, those are just random words. I liked this run on ROM. Because you had this glorious assortment of inkers. You had Butch Geist, you had Bob Layton, you had P. Craig Russell. Oddly enough, when the new ROM series started, Chris Rydell of IDW sent Ditko a bunch of them. And Ditko said, I don't much care for the art, but then I never liked how my art looked on ROM because people overworked it. So here's the art of Ditko's from the 80s that I absolutely loved. And Ditko was like, yeah, it was over-inked. But Ditko inked himself a lot of the time. He was one of those guys who preferred to ink himself. I'm trying to think if there's anything else. Is there anything that I've missed in talking about Steve Ditko, Joe?
I'm sure there's tons of stuff, but the big thing is just, unless you were buying the stuff direct from him, he did so much stuff on his own. I mean, every so often it'll pop up in previews. I guess, was it number 20 of A. Ditko.
Yes.
Which is the first time I had ever seen it that I recall in previews. And I picked up an issue and, you know, art-wise, he still had it. I had no idea what he was writing about. But they sold really fast when I put them on eBay because nobody was carrying them.
Yeah. Now, did you ever pick up his stuff at Valiant when he did the WWE stories and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers stories?
I haven't picked up any of those.
But he did work for Valiant back when Valiant became red hot. Let's see, what was it he did there? He did, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, WWE. He did all the WWE stuff at Valiant. He actually worked on some of the... There it is. He worked on some of the superhero line at Archie in the early 80s. So, Ditko got around. And he was very much, if you had a job, he'd take it as long as he agreed with it. And he was very much a commercial artist. The solo stuff he did, you talked about, it's just illustrated essays. So if you see the Ditko package or Avenging World or things like that, don't pick it up thinking you're going to get, you know, something along the lines of the Creeper or Mr. A or the Mocker. You're going to get an illustrated essay about his philosophy.
Kirby Unleashed.
Kirby
Ditko.
Kirby Unleashed was a portfolio. Ditko Unleashed was a lecture.
Yeah.
Well, you know who's not going to lecture you, Joe?
Hopefully my mom. Mainly since I moved out and I'm already 53.
Oh, she'll still lecture you. She's your mom.
Yeah, there is that. There is that, yeah.
But I meant these guys, our sponsors.
That's right. Here at the Solitaire Rose Radio Network, we have ads. And our first sponsor is me. That's right. Your charming and delightful old Uncle Rat Bastard. I have my first book out with Dangerous Dan Moore. It's the first 100 strips of our online web strip, Worldwide News, the story of the lowest-rated cable news network. And you can get yourself a copy with commentary, with all sorts of extras, with signatures and everything. Just email Dan over at lordshadowflame@gmail.com. Our top sponsor, who's been with us since day one, is DreamHost. DreamHost.com. You need yourself a website, and DreamHost.com is the number one web host in the whole known universe. Just head over to DreamHost.com, put in the code CRAZY, K-R-A-Y-Z, get $20 off your first year. How can you beat that? Our other sponsor is Graze, G-R-A-Z-E.com. Healthy snacks for a healthy lifestyle. Just head over to Graze, put in the code CORYS3R5P. Your first and fifth box are free. You can get them weekly. You can get them bi-weekly. You can get them monthly. You can just order a whole bunch of them. It's great stuff to keep you away from the vending machine at work. Now, if you would like to leave a comment for any of the podcasts that we do, we'd love those. Go ahead and email us at solitairerosenetwork@gmail.com, or you can call 952-856-0519. Operators are standing by. Okay, it's just a place that we'll record your calls, but we'll play them on the air. We'll answer your questions. We love getting feedback. Tell us what you think. Ask a question. Suggest a topic. Be a guest. Send us your stuff. SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. If you would like to advertise on any of the Solitaire Rose radio shows, you can. Just email us at SolitaireRoseNetwork@gmail.com. Subject advertising. Thanks.
Woo-hoo.
And if you want to listen to me blather on more about stuff, here's the other podcast we have.
The Solitaire Rose Radio Network has all sorts of podcasts. We've got Scrabbling Across the West with Dave Cafell and his lovely bride, Stephanie. They travel across the country playing musical gigs, and at night they sit down to play Scrabble and talk about their day at scrabbling.solitairerose.com. There's Novelcast over at novels.solitairerose.com, where I take the novels that I've written and turn them into audio podcasts. Currently, we are doing a novel called Do the Job, which is a murder mystery set in the world of 1980s professional wrestling. Then over at badadvice.solitairerose.com, me, Corey Strode, and Wolfie B. Bad, along with Dan Moore, give bad advice to people who send in questions. That's bad advice over at badadvice.solitairerose.com. The Solitaire Rose Radio Network is growing. Be there! You think NBC will get mad I used that?
Joe's probably happy about this episode because I did most of the talking.
It was. Usually, every so often, I cut loose and I was able to just sit back and listen and learn, actually.
One of the things that when I mix the episodes, I could tell because it's like, oh, this is one where Joe took over because you can actually visually see who talked more. And for the past three or four, it's just been you.
Yeah. Every so often, I got it. You know, I'll just sit back, have some fireball, and just let you go on.
Well, I've gone on enough. It's now time for Joe's favorite part of the show. No, fire drill. No, not where he drops ice cubes down his underpants.
We're not going to do a fire drill?
No fire drill. It's Joe, what's going on the eBays?
I do like that ice cube idea. You know it's about freaking me 90 degrees the next 4 days here?
Yeah, I know. What up with that?
What's up with that? Well, it's a good day to stay indoors and do some eBaying. And that's exactly what I did. Take a quick look at some of the things that sold. Transformers, Maximum Dinobots. This was a run from IDW. And went pretty well. Corey, do you know who? Let's ask the Strode. Hang on, let's see if I got that.
A shiny new dime?
How about two decrepit rusted nickels?
Okay, I could do that.
Who was in DC Comics Presents number one from 1978?
Well, I know that it was Superman and somebody.
Yep.
So I'm going to guess Superman and Green Lantern?
Nope, that was that came later. That was actually a big issue because that was the one that first appearance of Teen Titans. But no, it was Superman and Flash in their fourth race. And it went over into the second issue of DC Comics Presents as well. I had a ripped up copy that I sold for a fairly inexpensive price. So just goes to show there are people that are looking for just reader copies of books. They don't necessarily want the mintest cherry mint thing they can find. Although some do. I ended up selling a copy of Doctor Who number one from IDW again. This was the Graham Crackers photo variant cover. Graham Crackers being they're Chicago based, aren't they? Or just all over Illinois?
Chicago based mostly.
Yeah, and he comes up to the MCBA cons usually. Not sure if he's coming up to Fall Con, which will be October 6, 2018, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, the one-day wonder. And I'm not even sure if I'm going to make it.
Now, here's my question about how they've gone an hour later.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, I know when on Sundays especially, by like 2 or 3 in the afternoon, it would go dead. Has the extra hour mean that people hang out longer and stuff sells more? Is that an extra hour where people just kind of, the dealers just kind of hang around and stare at their watches?
Well, judging by the last con, people are hanging around.
Okay.
They were going to the art auction. Dealers were making deals. There's always guys who, like, you know, 1 o'clock are starting to fold up to leave. But yeah, we hung out. I mean, I mentioned that the art auction, everything sold but two items, and those two items came back to the store that we were running, and those two items sell there. Matter of fact, we sold so much of this stuff that I'm not even sure if we'll have a store next year. I got nothing left to sell, but that's a year away. We'll deal with that later. And like I said, Graham Cracker comes up to the cons, usually does a pretty good job. Let's see. Corey, did you ever read Patsy Walker Hellcat from 2008?
Yes, I love Patsy Walker. I do. It's a shame how they've messed up the character over the last 20 years. Because I like the fact that she was, you know, basically she was in, she'd been around Marvel forever because she was in one of the teen soap opera romance comics that Stan Lee did. And eventually Steve Englehart brought her in and made her a superhero. And she was kind of the first superhero groupie, became a superhero kind of like how the new Ms. Marvel is kind of a superhero fan. But she was always just kind of happy to be there, amazed that people liked her, and was really close friends with the Beast. And then she started dating Damien Hellstrom, son of Satan, and died a few times, and we got her soul trapped in hell, and kind of ruined all the fun of the character.
Hey, the last run, they kind of brought some of the fun back. This particular one, though, like you said, it was Catherine Immonen and David. Oh yeah, I'm going to pronounce that name. La Fuente. Aha, and it was only 5 issues, so it ended up going. Sold a Marvel Premiere 11 with a Doctor Strange in it from 1973, as well as 4 random Marvel Classic Comics. That was the Roy Thomas inspired Classic Illustrated line that they did. And as far as what's going up on eBay, well, if you want to check it out, KRAYZ, you can either follow the links through the Solitaire Rose Network website. Just go to eBay Direct and find me. And if you mention you listen to this here podcast, I would reach out and I would pull this out of my thing and add it to you. How about I Hate Fairyland from Scotty Young? I got a run here that we sold at the con, and you never know what kind of fun things I'll give you. I've dropped things off in person. I've given free shipping. I've given copies, signed copies of Worldwide News by Strode and Moore.
What?
I know. I'm just a giving guy.
Give. It's what you do.
Yep. It's all I do. Bye, Ollie.
Well, I thought somebody was there.
Yeah. Ollie came in to visit. Actually, she didn't visit. She said, she's like, could you borrow me some money to fill up gas? I'm like, here, take the credit card, fill it up.
Did you put on pants first?
She's used to me without pants.
Oh, Lord.
I know.
You going to pay for therapy in a few years?
I am paying for it now.
Oh, good.
Why wait for years? I know they're going to put me in that crooked home they saw in 60 Minutes. With all my luck, you'll be the one taking care of me. The podcast shall go on. Could you imagine that? We're going to talk today about comic books. A French toast, please.
French toast.
Be a cold day in hell before I recognize Missouri.
And now it's my favorite part of the show. No, not where I stop recording and go make me some French toast.
Ooh, I know. It's just, and I got an IHOP nearby.
No, it's a freaking a geeking. Joe, what are you freaking on? And may I say, we need our hip watch for this
week. Well, I'm actually feeling pretty good this week. One of the things was that my chiropractor gave my work a note saying that I have to not touch any luggage. So I sit on the computers most of the day. They have this thing where they use x-rays to see what's inside of a luggage. And if it looks suspicious or it's something that we're not sure about, I send it to a bag check. And then they open it up and take a look. That's what helps speed up the baggage, at least going out of Minneapolis, St. Paul Airport. Didn't move around a lot, but it still had the same problem where I start walking and, you know, you go into the restroom and about 20 feet into a 100-foot walk, I felt like I was going to collapse. But eventually the rest helped. I went to the chiropractor this morning. He continued the no baggage lifting. Now, the next week, i.e. tomorrow and Friday, I go to meet my new rheumatologist. I get his opinion on what's going on. But Friday, I actually go in to talk to an orthopedic surgeon. He's the guy who would actually put the bloody hip inside me, and I'll see what he has to say. Consequently, if I do it, I'd have to then figure out how I'm going to deal with it at work. That's why I mentioned earlier, I may not be in any shape to go to the MCBA con in October. Because most of the guys I talk to, they have their hips. You know, one guy, oh, it's only 3 weeks recovery time. And I said, yeah, but you're built like Lou Ferrigno. You know, some guy like me, I don't know, some of the guys at work are like, yeah, it took me 6 weeks. Another guy, oh, I was out for 12. And I'm like, ugh. So you might have some special guest stars while I'm all looped up on morphine.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, of course you'll have to go find them, but that's a different thing.
Oh, no, the special guest stars today would be you all looped up on morphine.
Yeah, I could do that now. I'll just have another shot of Fireball. So, yeah, I mean, I've been walking pretty good today, and I don't know if it's the heat that's helping, because we got, apparently the humidity's dropping, which is helpful, but they said it's going to go back up. So by next week this time, I will know, well, no more, if we're actually going to become the Bionic comic fan, or maybe be assimilated by the Borg.
Ooh.
One of the two. Maybe I can get FM in this thing and just listen to music to myself. Other than that, that's about it. I mean, when your health is kind of going downhill, you really don't freak about too much else. What are you freaking on, Mr. Schrode?
Last week was 4th of July, and they approved four people to have the day after 4th of July and the day after the day after 4th of July off. That was before they let go of six of the temps and got rid of the people in Texas and New Jersey. Thursday and Friday were the busiest days at my job I've ever had. They track everything we do, so they actually could track how much time you are spent on the phone and how much time is spent not on the phone. And they don't count the time when you're writing everything up. They don't count the time when you're on your 15-minute break. Thursday and Friday, my time not on the phone over my 9-hour shift, because I was stupid and volunteered for overtime, was 42 minutes. 30 minutes of that was my break. There were times when I was writing up the previous call while helping the current call, because the current call was like they needed to reset their password. Fine, I can, you know, it's okay, do this. And then for most people who are needing help resetting their password, it takes them a good 3 to 4 minutes to do that. Where they're, well, I typed this, I did everything it told me to, and nothing happened. Did you put the slashes in for your date of birth like it tells you to do on the page? Oh no, I didn't do that. Did you put in your zip code? Oh, no, I didn't do that. And the worst part's when you get to actually setting the password, you would say. It needs to have an uppercase letter, a lowercase letter, a number, and one of the special characters listed. You didn't accept it. Can you tell me what your password is? BOB123. Were any of those letters capitalized? Nope. Did you have any of the special characters on the site? Nope. Okay. Your password needs to have an uppercase letter. Oh, I went in with a mind ready to work. I left every night with a skull full of mush. And today was not much better, even though people were back.
But the real question is, did you ever get a hold of those Walmart exclusive comics?
I have two of them.
Oh, wow.
I have Justice League and Batman. Now, the Batmans, both of them are, the spines are a little beat up. But If Joe, you get the Teen Titans and Superman, I will trade you, because I have four of the Justice League and two of the Batman.
Oh, I haven't actually looked, although I have been watching on eBay. They tend to be selling as a set for about $40.
Yeah.
And the price is dropping because as people are putting them on. Now, I'm just curious on this, if this is going to give Walmart a warped idea on these, because obviously these first editions have sold out, or not. I don't know. There's a lot of Walmarts around. I haven't really been looking. But, you know, to see so many of on eBay versus, you know, they're not getting to the people we want them to get to, non-comic fans. But
the rumor is that they only printed 15,000.
That would sound about right.
But here's the thing. It's also, we haven't got the issues that are written by Tom King and Brian Michael Bendis yet.
Yeah.
So I have a feeling that these are going to continue to do well for quite a while. I know that the ones I picked up, it's a new story, and the new story's okay, and then reprints of Jim Lee Batman and Jim Lee Justice League. So they're a really nice package. They really are. And some people were saying, oh, well, it's going to be on newsprint. It's not on newsprint. It's on really nice paper. The colors don't bleed through. The art looks really nice on it. $5 a pop. I love them. I absolutely.
Where
love
did you find them?
They are with the you know when you go to some Walmarts and they have, here's all the twin stuff? You know, here are the twins glasses and baseballs and mini bats, and here's all of the Pokemon cards and stuff like that. So they're in that section toward the front of the store. And the one Walmart I went to last Tuesday, and they only had one of the Justice League. And when I went and saw Ant-Man and Wasp on Sunday, they had more of the Justice League and two of the Batman. So they're getting restocked. And from what I hear, the restock is an outside company, kind of like the same company that brings in the
magazines. Oh, like a rack jobber.
Yeah. So, but man, I hate going to Walmart. Oh, I hate going to Walmart.
Maybe I'll check out a few tomorrow, see if I can find something.
Let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anything else I'm freaking on other than work. The group home is trying something new tomorrow, so that'll be interesting. I will be a sleep staff, but I will be the only staff in that cottage that night. So they're getting now to the point where it's like, well, we can't find anyone to stay awake. Are you willing to sleep in that cottage? Yeah. Okay. Wake up and check on them every few hours, I guess.
Wow, that is a healthy Corey in the morning.
It reminds me of the first group home job I had, because remember that first group home, you would sleep there, and then you would wake up and whenever you heard a sound or to check on the residents and everything, and that's kind of what I'm going to be doing now. Other than that, there's not a lot I'm creeping on.
Strode, home cop.
Not a lot I am freaking on. Looking through previews, there was nothing in there that got me freaked out, so Joe!
What? Talk about previews next week?
Yeah, well, yeah, next week will be good.
Because I just got mine today, and that'll start me off on the geeking, because I got my box day. Woo! Today. So, you heard my daughter take off, so she's going to be gone for the night, and my wife's got up at the cabin. So I'm going to just dig through and read some comic books. Woo! And I got the Runaway Omnibus.
Oh, yeah, that's a nice book.
It is, and I wasn't going to buy it until I read the... It had to be one of the free comic book day giveaways where I was like, hey, this is actually a pretty good story. So, and of course, first thing I'll do is rip through that previews because it's like getting a Christmas catalog every month. For those of you who remember getting like a Sears or Ward's Christmas catalog or even JCPenney's. So,
you actually read the JCPenney catalog? Wow, you were desperate.
Looking for toys. And when I got older, lingering on the lingerie ads. But, anyways. I am reading Final Crisis, the actual written version by Greg Cox, because you know he did Identity Crisis, Final Crisis, and then there was one other book he did. And one of the reasons I'm reading it is because I remember when it first came out, I was not as tuned into it as, well, say like Corey was, because I did not have a lot of the fourth world knowledge behind me. As I continue to read and reread and go read the annotated versions, and again, reading the actual book, Final Crisis, I'm getting more and more impressed with what Grant Morrison and company pulled off. Because this is just, to me, this is almost like the fitting coda to the DC universe I grew up with, you know, before Flashpoint. And parts of me are like, do we even want to see the battle between Apocalypse and New Gods? Is there anybody who could do it justice? Because we already know Darkseid's going to win. But just a phenomenal book. I'm having a great time reading it. I'm almost down to it. And then, of course, as soon as I'm done with this, I'm going to pull out the graphic novels and quite possibly the tie-ins that I have and just sit down and read it. So I'm having a lot of fun with that. Haven't seen any movies. Most of the TV shows I'm watching are like local productions. Like I watched one on Highway 61 and talking about the little pieces of history that are left behind, like up on the North Shore, not far from where you and I were, Corey. There's a huge concrete slab, and on that slab used to be how would you call it? They'd bring in big bands and the performers of the era, and people would come and have dinner and dance and just a major league thing. And there's some even farther down south, dance clubs. And now that's kind of faded. you go see bands, but it's not like the destination. You're like, hey, we're heading to the supper club to eat and dance and whatever. That was the entertainment you did. Now it's like, oh, let's see what I can binge watch on Netflix. Speaking of which, I can binge watch on Netflix.
Right,
I get a lot of
can. You I should can watch Glow.
I am. Oh, that's on the list. I want to finish the toys we grew up with. Chris was not interested in Lost in Space. I am. Plus, a lot of times when I'm really, really tired, I just stop and I'll watch an old Star Trek rerun or watch the Whose Line Is It Anyways on CW's back, because that's their summer fill-in show. And it's fun. I mean, I would love to see like Drew Carey come in as like a guest star, but usually it's just the guys we knew. And sometimes they'll bring in someone. They bring a lot of people from the CW shows. It's real fun when the actors get into it and get involved. So just a lot of fun. I always find myself busting a gut every so often. Then I wonder if I have the chops to do that type of improv. You never know.
Never know.
So what did you geeking on, Mr. Strode?
First off, I had the weekend off. I think you and I talked a little before the show. I was just supposed to do sleep shifts Friday and Saturday night. And they pushed me and pushed me and pushed me to do more, and I kept saying no. And a lot of it was because I was pretty close to burnout. Hence the freaking I did. So Saturday, I actually got home around 6:30 in the morning, and I was like, hey, I have all day till I have to go back. I cleaned the kitchen. The kitchen now looks livable. I watched a whole bunch of New Japan Pro Wrestling. I watched a whole bunch of noir movies that I had built up on the DVR. I got the living room livable. I did all my laundry. You don't want to know how much laundry there was, Joe.
And you complain about me when I'm not wearing pants.
And I cooked. I made a couple of cold soups that were amazingly wonderful. And Saturday and Sunday were also not hot days. I think Saturday it got up to 85 and Sunday it only got up to like 80, I think. But it were both very comfortable days. I sat out on the deck and read comic books and generally enjoyed having time off. I went and saw Ant-Man and Wasp, which was a lot of fun. Much like the first one, it's more of a light heist movie rather than... One of the things I like about the Marvel movies is each character, they get a different style of movie. You know, with Iron Man, it's very much, you know, kind of your standard superhero, what you think of a superhero movie. Thor is more fantasy. Captain America is espionage. Ant-Man and the Wasp was very much a comedy caper movie. With car chases and double crosses and things like that. And I think that's why the Marvel movies work so well, is because they're all a little different. They're the same enough that you enjoy them and they fit in the same universe, but they're different enough that it doesn't feel like, oh my God, this is the 18th fucking movie like this. But the best part of the Ant-Man and Wasp movie wasn't the movie.
Oh.
After the lights came up and they're starting to do the credits, about three rows down in front of me was this kid. He was between like 5 and 7. And he thought this was the greatest experience of his life. And he could not stop talking. He was talking. He basically told the whole story of the movie to his parents, who, you know, were right there and had watched the movie. But he was so excited about it and couldn't stop talking about it. Went on and on and on about how much he loved it and what he wanted to see in the next movie and how he wanted to see more of it. And he was just giddy. It was the happiest. You know, I've been happy about things. He was so unbelievably happy about this movie. Ah, it was just a blast. Coming up in 2 weeks, I'm looking at my schedule at the group home, and they have all of their overnights filled for Friday and Saturday, and it's when I don't work Friday and Saturday. Joe, I have an entire weekend off.
I don't think that'll happen.
I could go to the drive-in one of those nights.
Ooh.
I could go out on a Saturday night. because I don't have to be at work at 9:30 to 10 o'clock. I could have a social life. Wow.
Yeah, I keep dreaming, fanboy.
Box day, I got the... I also got the Runaways, but I also got... I think I told you I got Infinite Crisis. The entire thing in an omnibus. Oh my god, that thing is huge.
I know, I just wish I had the funds to do it.
And looking through the previews, you know how we talked about how Marvel's getting Conan back?
Yeah.
They already have.
Yeah.
Conan Omnibus number one in previews. Now, it's not coming out till January, and I think if I read right, it's coming out the first week of January, so it's like yeah, we got Conan back. Here you go. Here's an omnibus. First Wednesday. So, yeah, that's going to be cool. That's going to be exciting. I wonder how many of the how many omnibuses they'll do for Conan. Because by the time you get to the end of Roy Thomas's run, after the other creators take over, it's like, yeah, this isn't very good anymore. But I do want to get the entire Roy Thomas run in omnibuses if they do that. And I wonder if they'll put the Savage Sword of Conans in that, or if they'll get their own omnibus. Ooh, who knows what Marvel's going to do, but it's going to be cool.
Just take my money now!
Pretty much. And other than that, I don't... Well, I was not going to sleep at the group home, but I'm sleeping there tomorrow night, so yeah, things can change. But really... I feel very refreshed after the weekend. And my lady chef friend in Amsterdam, who's lived in... have I told you all the places she lived? No. She was born in South Africa. Her parents are Romanian, so she would visit her grandparents in Romania. Her dad then moved to Australia, and her mom moved to Germany, and she went to school in England, and now she is living in Amsterdam, and she used to visit here to visit family every couple times a year, but now she has her own job and everything, so she doesn't have time to visit. But she sent me a whole bunch of pictures this morning. And I got to tell you something. There ain't nothing better in the world than waking up to a whole bunch of pictures of a beautiful brunette. So believe it or not, kids, you've listened to us blather on about funny books and tremendous brunettes for an hour and a half.
Well, not the brunettes. I mean, I know Ditko had a brunette hair, but, you know. Okay, I suppose that's right.
And as we say every week, the comic we like the least, we still like better than the comic that you like the most. Joe?
If you have a certain point of view and reasons that you think are valid, then whether it's pro or anti, you can only and should only express those views you honestly hold. Steve Ditko. Hit my music.
Done, bitches!